With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Orange and Brown Talk podcast on a Tuesday. Dan Lobby with Mary Kay Cabot and Ashley Bastock. We're recording this. Like I said, it is Tuesday. It's about 2:30. And Monday, the 18th, was actually the anniversary of a pretty momentous moment for the Cleveland Browns. They made the trade to acquire Deshaun Watson, sending 3 first-round picks, a bunch of other picks as well. They got some things back. And then, of course, they guaranteed him that $230 million contract, which is still the largest fully guaranteed contract in the history of the NFL. So, obviously, a huge moment for the Browns. There was a lot swirling around that offseason with Baker Mayfield and what they were going to do there. And, of course, at the time, Deshaun Watson still had the lawsuits pending. Now he's down to 2 lawsuits pending, but it reached over 24. As that trade was being consummated and even beyond a little bit, 24 lawsuits accusing him of sexual misconduct during massage sessions. It was all very complicated. And I guess I want to revisit it here because the first question I just had on my mind was, are the Browns better off today at the quarterback position, in the same spot at the quarterback position, or worse off at the quarterback position 2 years after this trade went down? Mary Kay, it's more complicated than just that, you know, those 3 answers, but where are they right now as compared to where they were 2 years ago?
They're in limbo right now. They're in limbo because Deshaun Watson is coming off of a shoulder surgery to repair a displaced fracture in his shoulder, which we don't have any precedent for that. We don't know how he's going to come back from this. And that's the reality of the situation. He's probably going to start throwing either today or tomorrow out at UCLA. They're going to take it easy with him throughout the offseason program, which begins in April 15th. And then he will start practicing a little bit more fully in training camp, which begins in July. But we don't know how he's going to do this season. And I think the whole trade is hanging in the balance. I wrote a story about this yesterday, and I went through everything that the Texans have gotten, in part because they just traded away the 3rd and final first-round pick from this trade. And the anniversary was yesterday. But we just don't know yet how this is going to work out yet. And my conclusion is, if Deshaun Watson can win a Super Bowl for the Cleveland Browns, they can still win this trade. All is not lost yet. It's not over. But they acquired him to win a Super Bowl. If he does that, they can still win it. If the Texans don't win a Super Bowl and the Browns do win a Super Bowl, Browns win the trade. So I think we have to let it play out for another few years.
I do want to talk more about winning the trade, but I kind of want to stick with kind of where they are now before we do that, because I think that's an interesting discussion. Like, I personally don't know that the Texans could lose this trade, but that's we'll talk about that in a little bit. Ashley, when you think back 2 years ago where the Browns were, Mary Kay said it, they're in limbo right now. That's sort of where they were 2 years ago, right? Because it really felt like if you brought Baker Mayfield back, it was going to be a really tough sell to a good chunk of the fan base. this before the trade, obviously, we're talking. We didn't know what they were going to do at quarterback. Right now, I guess we know what they're going to do at quarterback, but we just don't know how it's going to work out. So they're kind of in a similar spot. I think if you were going to make the case they were better off, it's just like, it's just because they have a plan, at least. We just don't know if the plan's going to work.
Yeah, I almost think they're in the same spot, but with different circumstances surrounding them. Because I think you look at when they made this trade, they were also still kind of in limbo, even after they made the trade. And it was like, okay, you know they're going to trade Baker after this. He's not going to be here. They're moving on. But there was that knowledge that, hey, this guy is probably going to be suspended for, you know, a significant portion of the season. And it obviously took a while before that ultimately became an 11-game suspension in August or whenever that was, in later in the summer when we were already well into training camp and things like that. So now there's that uncertainty because of everything Mary Kay just laid out. This injury, and of course, with the suspension, and we've talked about this before, I think we've all been really careful to distinguish, like, hey, uncertainty because of an injury timeline is one thing. A suspension is a totally different thing, number one, because of the reasons, but number two, because there is a set end date. You know, okay, he's coming back at this time. He can start practicing on this day. It's much more formulaic. This limbo is, in my opinion, a bit scarier because you don't know what this is ultimately going to look like as he continues this rehab. So it is a really interesting question.
Yeah, and I think back to last year, right? We were talking last year about Deshaun, like, regaining that form. And the question was just, could he do it with, the layoff? But I think most of us were pretty confident that Deshaun Watson could at least get back close to being Deshaun Watson again. There were a few signs in those six games that he played. You know, he had that really good half against Washington, for example, played okay against the Ravens in a weather game. So there were some signs that things could go the right direction. And it was just a matter of him regaining that form off of a suspension and time off. And I think that's what complicates this, Mary Kay, is this isn't just, hey, have you stayed in shape and, you know, done the things you're supposed to do off the field. It's, you're coming off an unprecedented injury. So again, I would not argue they are worse off at the quarterback position just because there is that glimmer of hope that Deshaun could maybe be, even if he's not Deshaun, he could maybe be a top half of the league, top 10 quarterback, something like that. But just that unknown, just the great unknown here that this injury creates just makes this so much harder to even talk about what he could be in 2024.
It really does. And think about this. I've thought about this a fair amount. If he never returns to the Deshaun Watson that he was in Houston, they have an excuse. Everybody has an excuse now. All you have to say is, no, we didn't make a horrible trade. We didn't erroneously evaluate Deshaun Watson. He had a fractured shoulder that no one else has ever had in the NFL and no one else has ever come back from. So if this does not work out, nobody expects that to happen. But if this doesn't work out, they have a built-in excuse. And the fans might forgive them for that. Of course, they would have to recover from it. There are teams right now that we see are trying to recover from mistakes at quarterback. It happens all the time. It's really hard to draft quarterbacks. Look what the 49ers had to do. Somehow they pulled a rabbit out of a hat with Brock Purdy. Somehow they managed to do that with Mr. Irrelevant. But that's not an easy thing to do. So, and look, we're seeing the Steelers go through it right now. They made a mistake with Kenny Pickett, and they are in the process of rectifying that mistake. The Chicago Bears made what they felt like was a mistake with Justin Fields. So it definitely happens. The Browns admitted that they felt like they made a mistake with Baker Mayfield. And Deshaun Watson was the solution to that. So it happens all the time. I saw a statistic this morning that of all the quarterbacks drafted since like 2019 or something, I can't remember what the stat is, but of all the quarterbacks drafted, only a very small amount of them are supposed to be starting games in 2024. I can't remember what it is. I'll have to go back and look for it. But it's easy to goof on these quarterbacks. In the case of Deshaun Watson, not only did you give up 3 first-round picks for him, but you also gave up the $230 million guaranteed. As you mentioned, Dan, still the largest guaranteed contract in the history of the NFL. So there's the money component and there's the draft pick component. But if they have to overcome it, if they have to do it, they're going to have to do exactly what the Steelers are doing right now. They're going to have to do what the Bears are doing right now. They're going to have to do what the 49ers had to do. They're going to have to find a way. But I think it's important to note that they will have a built-in excuse with the shoulder injury if this doesn't go right.
So that's a great segue, because that was another thing I wanted to talk about. Because I think when they made the trade, and also we should, like, Denver is going through this too, a trade that was made the same year as the Deshaun trade. You know, Denver had to move on from Russell Wilson, and they ate up a bunch. They are eating a bunch of money over the next couple years, which, again, I don't know. You hope we're not talking about that next year, but if he struggles this year and it's not working, then you start to wonder. But when they made this trade, I almost guarantee there's some podcast out there where I said, like, hey, if this doesn't work, it kind of doesn't matter because everybody's going to get fired. And honestly, 2 years later, Ashley, I don't feel like that. I feel like even if this season is a disaster and Deshaun Watson, and they need to move on from Deshaun Watson and eat a bunch of cap money, however they decide to do that to spread it out, I don't feel like, and this could change, this is easy to say in March, I don't feel like it would necessarily cost Kevin and Andrew their jobs. Somehow, some way, I feel like they could get out from this, and maybe the injury is a big part of it, and have a chance to actually try and find that Brock Purdy solution.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I do think the injury would be a big part of it, as Mary Kay laid out there. Like, it just becomes the ultimate, I think, reason for why this might not work out. And the Browns can use that in their favor, even though ultimately it might be what brings this trade crashing down to the ground from them if it all goes worst case scenario. But I also think, you know, when we talk about the ability to manage the cap and do things like that, that is Andrew Berry's best trait as a GM. Like, I 100% in my head, I'm like, of course she would keep that guy around because he's going to figure out a way to pull a rabbit out of a hat for you in that situation. So I definitely think that there is a reality where, hey, it's not their fault if it was this injury. And everyone kind of has that to fall back on. And I mean, there's plenty of reasons. Like, look at what Kevin's been able to do with these quarterbacks who are, you know, past their prime maybe, or not perfect vehicles to run an offense, and he's able to take it and maximize them, right? We've seen him do that time and time again with Joe Flacco, with Jacoby Brissett. He won games with PJ Walker and DTR when he had to. These guys have shown enough at this point, I think, on top of having the injury, to protect them if this goes south quickly.
I mean, Mary Kay, am I misreading that? I feel like they bought so much goodwill with this past season and what they did, making the playoffs, with going through all those quarterbacks. I think that's a big part of it. But am I misreading that? That, you know, as long as the season itself is not just some complete disaster and things just completely go off the rails, that Andrew and Kevin could realistically survive this if, for whatever reason, they do need to move on from Deshaun and it doesn't work.
Yes, and I absolutely 100% believe that the injury would be a big part of that. It, again, it's a built-in, call it whatever you want, but it is a built-in excuse. I think that is the number one way they can come out of this unscathed. There's nothing that you can do about a quarterback who can't be who he used to be because of an injury. Now, having said that, no one in that building believes that that's going to be an issue. They all firmly believe that this displaced fracture of the glenoid bone is going to heal so fully and not be an issue. So I don't think they're giving it a second thought. I don't think they are worried in the slightest that Deshaun Watson isn't going to come back 100% healthy. I think they firmly believe that he's going to be absolutely fine. But when you start messing around with a person's shoulder, I'm sorry, it's hard to come back and be who you were. So we're just going to have to see how this goes. But the other thing about Deshaun Watson is Andrew Berry revealed at his season wrap-up press conference, or at least reinforced the notion, that they looked at Deshaun as a 10-year project, not just a 5-year contract, but a 10-year answer, a full decade of being here trying to get this team to the Super Bowl. So I don't even know if they would move on from him or even acknowledge that it is a failure if it doesn't work out the way they want it to in 2024. I'm not entirely certain. They might chalk it up to he needs some more time coming off the shoulder injury. Let's go with Jameis Winston for a while. Let's see what happens in 2025. So because they're looking at the long-term plan of Deshaun, I don't think that they're going to look up and see that the sky is falling if it doesn't go exactly how they hope with him in 2024.
Okay, something else to sort of consider here with the Deshaun Watson trade was what else was available at the time. And we did a whole Baker Mayfield matrix. You guys remember the Baker matrix or the Mayfield matrix that we did with Doug? I think that was his idea, where we went through all the options that the Browns could do that offseason. And I'm thinking back, I remember at the time they felt like they were really kind of meh options, right? And I think we sort of avoided the Deshaun Watson thing that offseason, but none of them felt very exciting. So I guess, Ashley, when you think back to that offseason and just some of the names that we were throwing around, and frankly, how bad that draft ended up being quarterback-wise, I understand why the Browns saw this as their way out, because first of all, Deshaun was, the last time he played, he led the league in passing, so there was that. But like, there weren't a ton of enticing options. I mean, you're talking Marcus Mariota and, you know, maybe Jimmy Garoppolo, or I don't know. There just was, coming back with Baker Mayfield, there wasn't a lot out there to really change their fortunes at the position.
Yeah, I am actually going back. I found our Mayfield Matrix series as you were talking, Dan, because I'm like, wait, who were the names that we threw out there? And I think what you're referring to is basically the, we called it the Jared Goff option, like trading for a more established QB, and that was our historical comparison. So I just remember overall being like, the names that we threw out in the top tier that year were Aaron Rodgers and Russell Wilson. So I think it's smart looking at recent history that they didn't go after one of those two guys.
Yeah, and then just to add to that, Rodgers didn't get traded. He ended up not getting traded anyway. So
yeah. And we had Deshaun in this tier right below that we just said questionable. So we did have him quite literally in his own category, knowing probably how things were going to play out. But then you look at the tier right after that, which again, we said these would be, I think, the last grouping of guys that we would have considered quote unquote acceptable. Derek Carr, Kirk Cousins, Jimmy G, and Matt Ryan. So there was not just a ton out there that offseason. And I mean, I think that adds to why Deshaun kind of became the blockbuster trade that it did, because that was like the biggest quarterback move, I think, out of all of those names I just listed that could have been made.
Yeah. And I think, you know, sort of the Aaron Rodgers thing, Mary Kay, I mean, Kirk Cousins ended up, he just left Minnesota. Matt Ryan ended up in Indianapolis that year and just didn't really look like the old Matt Ryan. So it's just, as you go through those options, it turned out some of them were just unrealistic. You know, the draft ended up not being a realistic option to fill that void that year. So just from a football standpoint, obviously there was everything else that came with it, but just from a football standpoint, and the Browns were doing their work on Deshaun Watson. They admitted this in like November anyway. I understand why they decided they needed to go after this. They really, I think if they would have taken one of those other options, they would have been right in this same boat a year or two later. Now, I know we're doing a whole podcast about how we have no idea how this is going to work out, so maybe it wouldn't have mattered, but none of those guys were going to be fixes either, I don't think.
No, and in addition to that, I think a lot of people wonder about the whole Baker Mayfield situation. And it wasn't just about Baker Mayfield's ability or talent, because they were fully prepared to bring him back the following year if things didn't work out with this trade. And they didn't think things were going to work out with this trade. So they were prepared to bring Baker back, but Baker was a financial decision as much as anything else. He was going to be requiring one of those big extensions unless you had decided to franchise him and go down that road. So it was kind of about the money. They were at a crossroads with him from that standpoint. And it seemed prudent at that point to move on, start fresh, and try to get an upgrade.
Yeah. And Ashley, you were, I mean, that was your first, that was right after your first year on the beat. The Baker thing, you were there front row seeing that kind of fall apart. I suppose there probably was a world where everybody could have just sucked it up and brought him back, but I don't think it would have been like Tampa Bay Baker this year. I mean, he had a year sort of in the wilderness before that. I think he had to go through some changes maybe to become the Baker we saw this year in Tampa. That would have been tough.
I mean, yeah, he would have had Amari Cooper here, obviously, right? But he wouldn't have had Mike Evans. And I think ultimately why he's been able to do what he did in Tampa, a huge part of that goes to the pass catchers he has, and Mike Evans specifically, because he has just been a consistent producer. I mean, how many 1,000-yard seasons has he had in a row? Like 10 or 11? It's an insane number, basically. So, yeah, I think for me, the nail in the coffin on the Baker time here was the goodbye before the trade had even happened. He posted that long notes app goodbye to the city of Cleveland on like Tuesday night of that week. And the trade happened on a Friday. And the Browns, as we all remember, but I'm sure our listeners may also remember this, news had broke that the Browns were out of the running for Deshaun. We all know this has been well documented, well reported at this point. And then they came back with their second offer, and that's the one that took. So it went from being this thing that, hey, wasn't happening, and your starting quarterback just put this big notes app thing on Twitter because he couldn't contain himself, which of course was part of Baker's problem here. And yeah, I mean, he's talked about learning from some of those things. So I think that's also contributed to his resurgence this past year. But it definitely felt like it was over kind of regardless. Those couple days where we were in limbo, where they said, okay, the Browns are out of this until the trade happened, it still felt like he was not coming back here at that point.
The most expensive notes app apology, or what, I guess, I don't know what it was. The most expensive notes app thing in history, maybe, ends up costing the Browns $230 million. One other thing I want to get to. Mary Kay, you mentioned this, the idea of winning and losing the trade. So I kind of feel like the Texans, when all is said and done, I feel like we won't be saying the Texans lost this trade. And let me explain my thinking here. Deshaun wasn't going back there. He was done. He had requested a trade. He wanted out. So the Texans finally, after he sat out that season, put him on the market, traded him. They got those three picks, a bunch of other stuff. They end up bottoming out. They get kind of lucky that, you know, they ended up taking CJ Stroud, and the Panthers were the team that took Bryce Young number one. I wonder what would happen if the Texans would have been picking number one, but they end up in a pretty good position out of it. So I think, honestly, the Texans are fine. Like whatever happens from here on out, the Texans are where they need to be post Deshaun. Like he was never going to come back there and play for them. So I don't know if it's a matter of winning and losing the trade at this point. I think for the Browns, it's just a matter of getting what they need to get out of this trade. And that is a high level of play from Deshaun Watson. And, you know, like you've mentioned, you go and make that trade to go win Super Bowls. So to me, I kind of take the Texans out of the equation. They've recovered. They've got their guy. They're ready to go. Now it's just all about the Browns trying to salvage their end of it.
I agree with you to a large extent, but I also think it's at least interesting to see what the Texans were able to do with what they got from the Deshaun Watson trade. And I think they did build a cornerstone, a foundation for their football team. And look what happened. Their team knocked off the Browns 45-14 in the wild card round, in part because they have built this really solid nucleus of players, including Will Anderson, the former Alabama pass rusher, who is now the rising star of their defense. And they acquired Will Anderson in part from trading up to number 3 last year, right after they drafted C.J. Stroud. Some people think, oh, they got C.J. Stroud with a Watson pick. Well, no, they didn't. But they came back and they traded up with the Cardinals at number 3, using the Browns' number 12 pick and a few other things to move up to number 3 and select Will Anderson. Now, as I observed in a story that I wrote about this trade yesterday, you need Deloitte and Touche to help you keep track of it all. It's really, really confusing and challenging in the same way that the Carson Wentz trade of 2016 with the Eagles, it just kind of goes on in perpetuity. I don't even know if we have the end of that trade yet. I don't even know. I haven't even looked at that one for a while. We should revisit that one of these days.
It's going to be like 2035 and some player that was picked in that deal is going to get traded for a 7th round pick. And then that 7th round pick is going to become like 3 more picks. This thing, it might just go forever.
Right. And that's how this one is shaping up as well, because as we mentioned earlier, the Texans just traded the final installment, the final first round pick from this trade. They traded it away to the Vikings, and it was the number 23 overall pick. So they traded that, and now they gathered a few more things, including a second rounder in 2025. So that's a pretty high pick, a second rounder in 2025. So we will be talking about this trade for a long time. But in addition to Will Anderson, they used one of their picks, one of the Browns picks, it was part of a package, but they moved up to draft receiver Tank Dell. And I think that's interesting because they took receiver Tank Dell out of Houston only 5 picks before the Browns in the 3rd round, before the Browns drafted Cedric Tillman. And Tank Dell, as a rookie last year, he and C.J. Stroud combined for 709 yards before Tank Dell suffered a season-ending injury after like 11 games or something like that. He was on pace for 1,205 yards, and he was also on pace for 11 touchdown catches as a rookie. That is remarkable. Now, Cedric Tillman, he had a promising rookie year, but he only caught, I think, like 24 catches and no touchdowns. So Tank Dell, the Texans appear to have done a better job in drafting Tank Dell at this point. But again, we don't know yet. Different players get different opportunities. If Cedric Tillman gets that many targets, maybe he will have that many yards, catches, and touchdowns. So we have to see how that's going to go over the years. But that was part of it as well, Tank Dell. And then, once again, this thing is going to go out for a while because there's the 2025 second round pick, and then there is another, I believe, 4th round pick this year. So we'll have to see what they're going to do with those. Their 2022 picks, their first rounder on guard Kenyon Green, and their 4th rounder on Damian Pierce didn't go as well as their 2023 stuff did. But once again, they are parlaying those picks into more picks and more picks. So we'll have to revisit this every once in a while. But I agree with you. It's really more about the Cleveland Browns and what can Deshaun Watson do for them. And we just don't know. We just don't know yet. And that is the unfortunate part about all of this.
I think part of it, too, is we have to consider what not having those 3 first round picks meant for roster construction. Now, if Deshaun is Deshaun and this team wins Super Bowls, who cares? But you do lose something by not having those first round picks. So even if the Texans maybe directly didn't use those first round picks for, you know, they didn't stay in that spot and pick a Pro Bowler, you know, could the Browns have traded up for a receiver? in that first year of the draft when they gave up those picks? Could they have found, I've talked about it, could they have found an edge rusher in the first round to complement Miles for the long term? So you do lose something by just simply not having those picks, even if the team that had them maybe took a guard that didn't pan out. You might have done something different with that pick and added a really good player one way or another. So I think there's that element of it too. It's not just what Houston did with it. It's what you were unable to do because you didn't have that draft capital, which again, if you got your franchise quarterback, you'd do it every day, which brings me to this. I guess we'll wrap it with this. And then I want to talk about Jerry Jeudy a little bit. And Ashley, you had to go. So you're not going to, if you're wondering why you haven't heard Ashley, she had to run. So it's just me and Mary Kay right now. Do the Browns make this trade today? If they could have a time machine and go back in time, do you think they still make this deal? I kind of feel like they still might.
I think they would because they absolutely could not have predicted the shoulder injury, which I think is the number one reason why he hasn't been able to live up to his status last year. I mean, I don't think that he forgot how to play football. I mean, I do think there are circumstances that he's going to have to overcome. I've made these points before, that the game has changed since he was at the peak of his game, that they have caught up to the dual threat quarterbacks a little bit more, and he's going to have to pivot and adjust to some of those kinds of things. But they could not have foreseen the shoulder injury. And the other thing was, they had it on pretty good authority back then that the suspension was going to be somewhere in the neighborhood of 6 games, maybe get knocked back to 4. They never dreamt in a million years it would be an 11-game suspension. So here's the thing. In the 34 games that Deshaun Watson would have been eligible to play in these first two seasons, he's only played 12. And the Browns figured that he probably would have played 30, not just 12, but 30 by now, that perhaps he would have undergone a 4-game suspension, not 11. And so they just haven't gotten out of Deshaun Watson to this point what they fully expected to get. If they didn't know any of those things, I think they would have gone back and they would do this all over again.
And it still feels like they believe in him. It still feels like just organizationally they're behind him and believe he can be the player they want. It's just can he put together a 17-game season of high-level play? We just don't know the answer to that. We've seen little glimpses. Once we got through that Pittsburgh game this year, and he played pretty well against Tennessee. That's when he got hurt. Obviously, there's the Baltimore game, played pretty well against Arizona. There's been flashes. It's just getting 17 games of that type of quarterback play, and we just don't know the answer to that, which is why, going back to where we started, it's hard to kind of figure out how much farther along the Browns are now than they were 2 years ago, but that's what this season's about. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, if he had suffered a high ankle sprain and missed the final how many ever games of the season with a high ankle sprain or a hamstring or whatever, a bunch of different injuries, I think that the whole narrative, the whole vibe would be different right now. But the truth of the matter for them, for us, for anyone evaluating this, is we don't really know how he's going to come back from this injury. We have no idea. And I think they were supremely confident that he was going to be the quarterback that they traded for and spent all that money on. They believe in him that way. But the truth is they also don't know how he can come back from this injury. So it's just going to be a wait and see proposition.
I mean, that feeling after that Baltimore game was real. I mean, it was in that locker room. It was like a weight was lifted off of everyone after that Baltimore game. Like, this was it. And then it just obviously came crashing down later that week. We talked about the trade. One of the picks the Browns got back in that trade was part of what they sent to Denver. And the other pick was the Baker Mayfield pick. Part of the package they sent to Denver to get Jerry Jeudy. So we got to talk about this because it actually happened mid-podcast. We've recorded this in a couple parts. Let's talk about the Jerry Jeudy extension. So Mary Kay, kind of give us the details on Jeudy's extension here, the money, the years, kind of what you know at this point here at about 4 o'clock on Tuesday? Yeah, 4 o'clock on Tuesday.
As far as the extension is concerned, it's a 3-year extension. It goes through 2027. So it's really the new money that we're talking about. So it's 25, 26, and 27. And he's also obviously here for 2024. So he will be on this roster if he fulfills this contract for the next 4 seasons. And the contract is worth up to $58 million. So, and that's in the new money. So if he fulfills the contract and maxes it out, 58 in the new money divided by 3. Dan, can you do that for me real quick?
Let's see. Well, 60 divided by 3 is 20. So we're talking like 19-ish.
Okay. So that's the new money average on his contract, which is not bad. That's not bad. It's not premier receiver money because the top receivers in the NFL these days are getting $30 million a year, the top echelon of receivers. So this is a nice amount of money. It's a nice contract if he maxes it out at that. The only guaranteed or the fully guaranteed money in the contract is $41 million. So I haven't seen the whole structure of the contract yet. What I do know is I'm sure the first year, 2024, has probably been significantly reduced so that it's very cap friendly. For 2024, it could be $1 million, $2 million, whatever. But the $41 million guaranteed could turn it into a 2-year deal worth $20 million, right? Each. I mean, that's the kind of thing that this could really turn out to be. Like you can get out of it after 2 years and at $20 million each if it doesn't go the way that you want it to. So I still think that's really good. And now they've got Jeudy under contract for the foreseeable future. It's a vote of confidence in him. He wanted to feel wanted. What better way to say we love you than by giving him $41 million guaranteed? So pretty cool for him. Really good for the Browns. We know Deshaun Watson's excited about him. Now they just have to get him playing at that level that he played at with Russ Wilson in 2022 when he had almost 1,000 yards, 6 touchdowns, 67 catches. That's the kind of production they need out of Jerry Jeudy.
Yeah, there's a part of me that wants to be like, oh my gosh, this is crazy. I can't believe they gave him that much money. He hasn't even taken a snap for him, but I feel like NFL money is fake, especially with this team. Like they spend a bunch of money. You know, they have rich owners, always near the top in cash spending. Some of this is probably, like you mentioned, to sort of ease some of the cap burden. And it probably is more like a 2-year deal than anything else. So it's a gamble. I'm a little surprised they did it this quickly, but it is. I mean, it kind of is what it is at this point. I can't get worked up over these big contracts anymore outside of, you know, obviously that Deshaun contract is a little bit different because it was so unprecedented. But, you know, they kind of sending that message that you believe in this guy and he's going to be here for a while. You know, we'll see how it works out. But I don't think it's going to be some sort of crippling thing if it doesn't.
No. And here's the thing to remember. When we hear about these trades, we highly tout them as, oh, they got such a bargain. They got such a deal. Well, the truth of the matter, these trades, like the one for Amari Cooper, it's really not about the draft picks that much. These are football teams that need to unload this player or need to unload the player's salary for whatever reason. In the case of Jerry Jeudy, they were in cap hell and they needed to unload a bunch of millions. So the 5th round pick and the 6th round pick, you can say that all you want, that that's a bargain. That's really not the key item to look at. It's the money. They turned around and they extended Amari Cooper, giving him a really nice contract. And they did the same thing with Jerry Jeudy, giving him $20 million a year over the first 2 years of this contract. So that's really what this is about. You can't say this was a steal, this was a bargain, because they're paying him $20 million a year. Again, it's not top of market by any stretch of the imagination. But for his skill set, for his production to date, it's a really nice amount of money. And the Browns are also paying him for services they hope are rendered.
Right. We've seen this. This is what they did with David Njoku. You pay for the upside. That's smart. You know, we all, Paul DePodesta on that Moneyball background, that's a big philosophy. You want to pay for upside. You don't want to pay for past performance. So your hope is that he gets in here, Deshaun bounces back, and they mesh really well, and he becomes the receiver that he was when Denver took him in the first round. And again, I just don't think it's going to be one of those contracts that they're going to regret. You know, the first thought I had when I saw this was when they made the Jarvis deal, when John Dorsey made the Jarvis deal, and he immediately extended him for, it was a big number at the time. Was it 5 for $75 or something like that? It was a huge number at the time.
Yes.
But they brought him in, they extended him. They got a little bit of criticism for that, but he ended up being a really good player for this team, as we know. So sometimes this is just what you do. You trade for a guy because you like him, and so now you want to keep him around for a few years.
Yes, and when you go out and you get a receiver like this who was a former number one pick, a 15 overall pick just in 2020, and he's 24 years old, you're willing to shell out that money. You're saying that you believe in him and that you believe there's way more to come. That's what the Browns said. I put that in my headline. They believe that the best is yet to come with Jerry Jeudy. And in some cases, when Andrew Berry has said that about a player, it's worked out perfectly. That happened with David Njoku. He always believed in David Njoku. He never gave up on him. And David rose to that high opinion of him. And I think they expect that the same thing is going to happen with Jerry Jeudy. Again, 24 years old is very young. He was as young as David was when David was drafted. So here he is heading into his fifth season in the NFL, and he's only 24 years old. Some guys get drafted and they're almost 24 years old, or they're 23. So this is a very young receiver who's maybe worked out the kinks, worked out his problems, and probably had to mature a little bit, probably had to grow up a little bit. I think that he's going to do really well with Amari Cooper as his mentor. He's going to want to excel in front of Amari, his idol. And same thing with Elijah Moore. These guys are all from South Florida. They have a standard to uphold. They've got a tight-knit bond amongst the three of them. And I think they're ready in these three receiver sets to go out and make some noise.
And he's got a contract to live up to now. Mm-hmm. So there's that. That's a motivating factor too, you hope. Okay, there we go. Little Deshaun Watson, little Jerry Jeudy, all here on the Orange and Brown Talk podcast on a Tuesday. Make sure you're subscribed on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify so these pods will hit your feed as soon as I hit publish. It hits Spotify a little bit faster, so maybe that's where you want to check it out. Also become a Football Insider subscriber, cleveland.com/browns, the blue banner at the top of the page for that. Find us on Instagram, search Orange and Brown Talk, and find our YouTube channel, Cleveland Browns, on cleveland.com. For Mary Kay and Ashley, I'm Dan. Thanks for listening, everybody.